Throughout all of history, they've only talked about the fame, never the hard work, never the elbow grease, never the early call time.
All right, everyone. So I'm here in the podcast office with Andrew, and JJ just let in our guest, Harry. And we're going to ambush. He's giving him the tour right now, and the tour is going to end in the podcast studio, and we're going to ambush him.
With questions.
And just start the podcast immediately.
And he's going to have no idea what to expect.
I've never done this before.
I feel a little, like, is he going to react like if you pet a tiger too lightly and it thinks it's a fly and it swats it?
Have you seen that happen?
Never.
What if this is like, instincts kick in and it's like, oh shit, this is like a Chris Hansen, I gotta get the fuck out of here. Nah, Harry's not that kind of guy, right? He's good people.
We'll find out. Maybe that's our first question.
Yeah, you know what? We'll see if his fight or flight instinct kicks in. Depending on that, we'll decide whether or not to have him on as a guest.
Luckily, this place is so huge, he'll get lost trying to escape.
That's true. This tour is, we're probably going to be talking by ourselves for about 15 minutes. This place is so huge.
It's kind of like Versailles in France.
I like the cow skull over there.
The cow skull?
The cow skull adds a lot. It means, you know, whoever our guest is would look at it.
It looks like it's looking down at the business. Jim Gaffigan poster.
You mean business?
Yeah, that's true.
You know, it's definitely going to be a while till they get in here. You want to talk about my jacket?
I do.
So this jacket, I don't know. I mean, maybe we'll take a picture and post it on.
I think we should
post it on.
I need to see it without the sleeves too.
But yeah, that's true. Okay, so I got a black and white jacket. It kind of looks like a cardigan, Letterman's jacket. It's it is tennis themed.
Sorry, everybody.
Come on, dude. It is tennis themed. There are literally tennis nets on it. On the back, there is a tennis player with his arms up in victory. And, you know, it's...
Is it a female tennis player in the back? Because that's what I initially thought.
It is okay. A female. I mean, I don't know if it's a female tennis player, but they have... It has long hair.
The tennis player.
And then also the sleeves come off. You could zipper them off. And it's just like there's tennis rackets dangling off every zipper. It's really great.
Did Andre Agassi have long hair? Oh, shit.
Here it comes.
Sorry.
Hey, how's it going?
What's up?
I'm not going to go in there. That's
good. No, for sure. Yeah, all right, we'll just wait in here. Hey, man. How's it going?
Good, man.
Hey, good to see you again.
Good to see you.
Andrew.
Andrew.
How are you?
Good to meet you.
I know.
Oh, you guys have never met before?
Nope.
Yeah.
This is a first.
Okay.
You're hearing it live.
And we only met... Yeah.
Hi.
This has already started. We ambushed you. This was all JJ's idea, so...
Oh, it was my idea.
I don't know if this jeopardizes your guys' friendship.
It does. But I'm glad you guys started here. You know what? I'm gonna be right back. I'm gonna get some water.
We have water.
We got some right here.
Yeah, here we go.
And I gotta rinse this for a second.
Okay.
Rinse away.
So that was Harry. That was a good podcast.
Good show, everybody.
Yep, good show.
Do you want one too?
No, I'm good.
Are they cold?
They're cold, yeah. Huh. You know, funny thing that we were talking about getting a coffee maker, because the first thing Harry said was, do you have coffee?
Yeah, because we're assholes, because you don't have coffee.
I know.
Are we a podcast or are we a B&B? I mean, what's,
I don't know.
Are we both?
Can we just be a good host?
Drink coffee in the morning?
Yeah.
See, it's funny because you mentioned it earlier in the morning. I was like, "Do you guys have a coffee maker?" And like, we have an espresso maker. I'm like, perfect, but no coffee or a grinder or nothing. Sorry. So
it's a necessity in this.
Next time you're going to be here, we're totally going to have coffee for you.
Great.
I'm gonna make sure.
Next,
Andrew, do you want maybe close the door? Make sure the cats don't come.
I mean, I guess.
I mean, you don't have to, but it'd be nice.
The cats always feel left out.
Well, Harry,
what are you guys talking about?
Well, we're going to talk about you.
No.
Well, here, okay. So the point of this podcast is for people that either are trying to get into the entertainment industry,
oh, great.
People that haven't moved to LA yet, we're just trying to bring in, you know, we all have a network of people that do this. So, you know, bring them in, see how they got to where they are, maybe give some tips to the people trying to get in.
Oh, that's excellent.
Yeah. And we figured, you know, I took a look at your IMDb. You've done some cool stuff.
Oh, yeah. I haven't, you know, one of the things I've done is I haven't really updated my IMDb is not up to date. Like, I don't have, and it's interesting you say that because, yeah, I think a lot of people in town, they really use that to gauge someone's, you know, experience, skill set, you know, but it's not always true, you know. And also, recently, I don't know, but something's gone on with their engine. Like, when you add a credit, it gives you credit for stuff that you haven't even worked on. Especially in episodic, you know, I don't know if you've experienced that, but like when you add yourself to a new show,
yeah,
you oftentimes get credit on episodes you haven't even worked on. So.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Like, I know that for the last episode of Gossip Girl, I was Justin put me on as an assistant, and I was like, all right, sweet, thanks. But I didn't work on it. I was already on to Carry Iris at that point. Oh,
but you weren't demanding to be taken off.
Oh, no. I'm going to say no. No, I'm not going to do that. But no, it's very, very true.
We were on Revolution, and I've only done like 7 or 8 episodes, and I've been credited for like 12.
Hold on, do we even tell like who we're talking to? Like, do our listeners know who we're talking to? Yeah, give them the introduction.
Well, Harry's a good friend of mine. We worked on Gossip Girl together.
And full name, Harry.
Harry Jurgen.
Okay,
thank you.
Social Security number. just for tax purposes.
691. Yeah.
Oh, that's how mine starts too.
Harry, it's all about location, where you were born. But Harry was actually the first editor that I second editor I actually assisted on. Tim Good was the first.
Oh,
for
really?
Like for a week.
That if you count.
It doesn't count. Harry was the first one that I actually finished a show from start to end, and I learned a lot from Harry, and in working with him for so long and working next door to him, along with the prank wars that we would do, we became good friends. And
but also in the process of like whenever I work with guys, especially like in an assistant editor capacity, I always, you know, I always like to extend, like, you know, we have a full year and it's a lot of work and it's hard work, and so usually towards the end of it or the following season, I think we shared a credit. So I was like, you know, we gotta do that. And I did that currently with a guy that, you know, was working with me who had followed me from Cult. You know, we had done a CW show. Mm-hmm. And it didn't get picked up for the second season. But I extended that if he did continue this relationship, at some point we're going to be, and soon, you know, I was like, he was working, you know, he did really great work. And I was like, by the end of it, I was like, we're going to get a shared editing credit, hopefully by season 2. And so then we did that with JJ, and, you know, fortunately, I mean, there was an opportunity for JJ to step up and become an editor on Gossip Girl and Carry Diaries, which is great.
Are we getting good levels on Harry?
You're speaking a little far away from the mic, but I think we're doing all right.
You know what? I can just move this mic closer to me.
You want to kill the fan?
There we go.
We
can kill the fan.
There we go.
Okay, there you go.
Sorry to interrupt that. But
we should talk about also what you mentioned. I want to ask you guys, are you guys all from film school, or do you guys all go to film school?
I went to UC Irvine with a studio art major. Okay. So everything that I learned about film, I pretty much learned from him, because I interned for JJ. That's how I first broke into this line of work, I guess.
Okay. That's great.
I think that's how Andrew started too.
I was, everything I know, all three things I learned from JJ.
All three things?
No, mine is,
I taught him how to digitize.
I was I don't remember how to digitize.
Never mind.
Sorry. Mine's a broadcast journalism. Good. Major, which is how I got my job at NBC.
Oh, nice.
So it was more about networking.
What about you, Harry? How did you...
Did you...
Oh, no, I didn't go to film school. I did basically television and radio in college. That was my undergrad. But yeah, no film school. Kind of jumped into it.
No, that's now, interesting
you
to me.
You have a completely different...
No, I do. And what's interesting, you know, the reason I ask this question is because, you know, some listeners, I'm sure... There's going to be a bunch of listeners that are in film school, but there's also guys that are not in film school. And I didn't go to film school. Like, I didn't, you know, my formal education was not in journalism, or radio or television. And it was in finance, you know, it was finance and accounting and mathematics. And I decided, my first job in this business, I want to say was late 90s. And it was an intern in the in the residuals and cost reimbursement, you know, and some other finance departments within Paramount, and that's how I got started. But I knew that I wanted to try out the production side. I just didn't know enough about it. So,
how did you make that crossover?
You know, when I was an intern at Paramount, I really networked with some folks that were on the other side, and. And this is during the time I was graduating, so it was senior year at school. And I said, one thing I want to do is I want to definitely, whether I'm an assistant to a producer or a PA or even an intern, I didn't even, you know, I think there were interns at that time. Mm. And there's pages on the lot, you know, that would give tours. I said I wanted to try the production side. And so my first job was on a show called The Frasier, which you guys know.
Oh, sweet.
Sitcom, you know.
Frasier, oh yeah, that little show.
Yeah, and I was an assistant to, you know, the writers and producers, and there was a ton of them.
Did you work with Rob Hanning?
I worked with Rob Hanning, who's now on Castle, Chris Lloyd, Joe Keenan, and a bunch of really talented comedy writers.
Rob is amazing.
Rob is great, you know.
So you started off as a writer's assistant on Frasier.
Not a writer's assistant, we had writer's assistants. We had a couple of writer's assistants who would actually go to the room and write down notes. We would have an opportunity to spend time in the room, but we would also, and we were close to the writers, but we would also were also on set. So once a week, I think there was four of us, and once a week we'd rotate and we'd be on set. So we'd got a chance to really observe what the ADs did, got a chance to get to know the cast.
And, real immersive environment.
Yeah, and I did that for a season. I joined them in the middle of a season. They needed to fill, they were having a change. So I went to replace someone, and I fulfilled that season, and then I returned for another season. It was great. And during that, that was basically my sort of started my film school, you know. And so
super cool.
And so I got a chance to, you know, observe the writers, observe the editors, and I told the producers, I said, as we came back, I said, I want to spend more time in the editor's room, because it's something that off the top of my head, I mean, there was a couple of other areas that I was interested in, but definitely I wanted to pursue more editing. So I got a chance to work with Scott Maisano and Ron Volk, and Ron's, you know, won multiple Emmys, really talented dude, and we hit it off, and one thing I liked is the fact that they worked, you know, there was an opportunity for them to work on their own, like, you know, before they collaborated with writers and directors. And so, I don't know, I responded well to that. So I was like, okay, what I'll do is, during the hiatus, I'll go in there and I'll try to teach myself the Avid. And so, but then, you know, I have to tell you, everyone comes up differently. So for me, it was, you know, I'll go and meet the head of post at the studio, and Hal Harrison was TV head of post. And he said, look, he said, I'm not, you know, I can't extend a job to you right now because you're an assistant to the, you know, to Frasier. And, what you need to do is you need to leave the studio system and go and get your union hours, then come back. So the way I did that was I found a job at, through friends and contacts, at a company in North Hollywood that was doing reality television, you know, and and that company was Evolution.
Okay.
And so I went there. They were doing Fear Factor and, you know, a bunch of Disney Channel shows. And for a year, I worked nights, you know, on shows like Bug Juice and Totally in Tune and, you know, and a bunch of other stuff. And I accumulated more than the hours and days that I needed. So after that, you know, I went back. I basically joined the union and started looking for studio work. And my first job was Star Trek. So,
oh, nice.
Which is a good show to start on.
That worked out. I'm familiar with it.
Yeah.
Well, I think that editing allowed, because I was very technical minded when I was in high school, and I was actually going to go to school to be an engineer. And I feel like editing is the technical aspect of filmmaking that technical people really get their head around.
Sure, yeah.
Because it's not just emotional things. There are a lot of technical aspects in it that are almost like, that are very objective.
Yeah.
Where the film as a medium is very subjective.
Right.
Which I really like.
Like certain rules to editing, like not cutting on a blank or
yes, which stuff Harry like that. Taught me, and I, in turn, taught Nadav.
That's right. So I probably know all the secondhand stuff that you taught JJ. to a lesser degree.
Yeah.
No, but, you know, I want to circle back around to one thing, to be on point with what you originally said, is how do people start in this business?
Yeah.
So, look, you know, it's, you know, you make a bunch of mistakes and you learn from them. And sometimes, you know, for me, I wish I was equipped and I had more ammunition going or picking what I wanted to really study. And I think what you need to do, even in as early as high school, is really go out there and realize that there is, you know, you can explore and you know, see what you may like. If you feel like you don't know enough about the entertainment industry, you can find out more about it, you know. And so, you know, sometimes, but I definitely don't regret spending 5-6 years of my life studying, you know, finance. But at the same time, you know, I wish I had an idea or an inkling that I wanted to do this, and I would have maybe taken a minor in film studies. You know,
before you got into finance, were you like, okay, so I know I either want to do finance or film?
You know, once I was just exposed to that, so immediately I was like, you know, okay, I want to do this. I want to, you know, I want to do an internship at Merrill Lynch. I want to do an internship with the IRS or whatever it was, you know. And so, and actually, it was those two things, you know. But and then the entertainment industry was great, but at the same time, I found myself, you know, if I even then you get classified in a niche and you're like constantly moving, you're doing these lateral moves from studio to studio, working in finance. So, no, the entertainment business, you know, has a lot to offer. So, I mean, my current assistant, who you met, Armand, you know, mm-hmm. really good guy.
Yeah, great guy.
He went to film school. Let's talk about that. You know, he went to USC's film school, and there's another misconception. It's like when you go to film school, you don't always get work in this business. So right. His graduating class, a lot of them did not, not even in the entertainment business.
Right.
But he was fortunate enough to get in, and we often had conversations about, you know, like what he learned and, you know, directors he studied and you know, he tells me, he's like, I think, you know, we all thought that we would land somewhere in the business and we would be directing by now, and, you know, and but he had so much to learn as well. So we worked together for a few years, and we'll still continue doing that. But you know, yeah, he learned so much, and you know, you don't really develop a skill set till you're on the job. Like, you know, there's a lot of things. There's lots of opportunity. There's lots of moments that we had where we learned from each other, and towards the end, you know, just like a few months ago, we edited an episode together. And he was, you know, he was so thankful. And, you know, one thing that he has that I didn't have is he has a huge student loan. So, right. You know, you leave USC. Yeah. I mean, the second you graduate, they expect you to start making payments towards your loan. So,
and that's why they hope to have a directing gig. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Especially USC. That's hundreds of thousands of debt.
No, exactly. So he has this debt, and it's kind of, you know, well, he was fortunate because I have a lot of contacts in this business, so I was able to help him out. But he was like, you know, he was like, look, I really feel like I don't know if I can afford to stay out of work for so long, you know. And so I was like, don't worry about it, you know, we'll find something. And and before we finished Revolution, I had, you know, lunch with a friend of mine who's like the lead editor on The Walking Dead. And so he came over, Jute.
Mm-hmm.
We got together, and then he was looking for an assistant. And before he left the building, I had Armand, like, basically, I had a job for him. So
nice.
We finished awesome. Revolution, and he's, you know, now
on the walk. Hey, we need to talk a little bit more in depth later on. Pull some strings for me. But that's, yeah.
Well, what I was going to say, it's funny that you had the same path as I had, where you did a lot of reality stuff and got your days for the union, and then were able to find a union gig.
Right.
Which, finding a union gig is tough. Getting your hours is just as tough.
No, exactly. I mean, and nowadays, I think there's lots of guys out there who are like wondering where, you know, they'll find a job on a commercial, or they'll find a job, you know, working on a project, but they still don't have those hours, you know?
Exactly. So, that's actually the kind of the situation that I'm in right now, where when I moved to LA like 2 or 3 years ago, JJ is like, man, you need to get in the union. And I've been like, you know, accruing all my days, and then it's a matter of like contacting the businesses that you worked for and be like, hey, remember when I worked for you like 3 months ago on like 2 or 3 different movies? Can you write me a letter that says that I worked for you for that amount of time? And then I'm getting back to you. And at the moment, at least, like, I don't see an upside to joining the union, only because I haven't been offered any union work, but I'm sure that'll change once I'm in it.
Well, the thing
is, what do you say of like union versus non-union, and, you know, what it means to like be in it?
Well, this is what you can do. I think, you have to check with them once you've accumulated your days and hours, you can join. You don't have to pay, but you could join. You could get on the roster.
You don't have to pay your dues.
Yeah. And then you know, it's just a matter about where you get your opportunities. So if you have a job, it's a union job. It's something that you want to do, and you're excited about the project. Take it, and, you know, at that point, you know, you want to go to the union, and you want to get caught up with your initial payment, and, you know,
right.
But you don't necessarily. I think the challenge is getting all those hours within a, you know, within a 2-year period or whatever it is.
And then keeping that up
to date. Yeah, but once you do that, I think you should just get in. You should just get all your paperwork straightened out. And you should just get in, or you should be on the roster. You should be ready to, you know, it should be a matter of basically just getting, you know, getting everything in order. And so if you have the job, you're in. If you don't have the job,
true,
then, you know, you're working non-union. You're continuing to do that. So are you working now? Are you working in on a non-union show now? Or?
Yeah, I'm doing part-time for Universal Sports. I'm cutting sports highlights for them of, like, obscure European sports. And that's fun. Like, it's a little bit, like, I would love to be on a union show. Just I haven't been in a situation where that's been offered yet. Like, you know,
yeah, it's really your first, you know, it's about contacts. And I think, you know, I had a few contacts when I even got the job on Star Trek because I was, you know, I had friends of friends there and we're all. And again, like it was a studio that I had, you know, I had been on or been a part of for many years as an intern, as a, you know, and as an assistant to the guys on Frasier. So it was like, you know, I knew other PAs who were on Star Trek and, you know, and as assistant editors. And so, I mean, it's you're doing the right thing. I mean, you know, two guys now that are working, you know, studio jobs. And so if there's an opening on one of our shows, we can definitely, we'll definitely, like, you know, bring your name up. And,
sure.
And I think, you know, and I think there's opportunities out there. So once you get in, I think once you're in, it's like, you know, it just takes that one gig.
Yeah,
it's like a juggernaut process. And you're like, you can be an assistant for 10 years working, you know, in the studios, you know. And I think it's all about investment of time, right? So it's like, I have friends that invested their time in non-union shows and we're doing great. I mean, I have a friend who cut 11 seasons on Survivor, you know, and so.
Survivor wasn't union?
Not for a long time.
No, yeah. Maybe it is. Maybe it became union after at a certain point, but not when it first initially started. I mean, I don't think there was even a classification for reality television. You know, so
right.
But if you, I think if you're editing now and you definitely want to do, you know, union studio work, then you just keep an eye out.
So it should be. So I should have it like my number one top priority to get into the union as soon as I can, so that if. It's better. It's one of those things. Better to have it and not need it than need it and not have it. Because then you're kind of.
I think so. Yeah, you got your hours right.
You got your days all over the place. I just need to like wrangle all my letters.
I think you should. I think you should. Yeah, and then you should totally. Yeah. I mean, I again, like if you're not doing editing work and you're doing like, let's say you're, you know, I mean, if you're bouncing between editing and weren't you doing photography on that one project that we were going to do? Doing DP stuff?
Oh, I was doing DIT stuff.
DIT
I mean,
stuff.
Okay. That's just like,
yeah.
Like I have the skill set for it, but definitely, yeah. I mean, I don't know anyone that wants to be like a glorified DIT, like career DIT. But.
No, but at the same time, it's, you know, keep in mind that you may find yourself as, there may be a lucrative position where as a DIT, you're doing that for a year.
Oh, right.
And, you know, that throws you off course from the editors guild. And so if you've got your hours, you should look into just getting on the roster and doing whatever you need to do.
Oh,
I mean, you could be on the roster and not be paid, you know, not contribute payments, you know. And so you're I mean, it sounds like you're there. And I think now at this point, it's like once you're in, then you don't have to even think about it. You know?
Yeah,
and
true.
So,
Speaking of,
you can focus on your career more. You know,
I would love to do that.
joining the union and your first assistant gig was Star Trek.
Yeah,
and that's where you met Daryl.
Yeah, that's right. I met my first editor on. What was interesting was I joined them on the. They needed help on the season finale of Voyager,
mm-hmm.
And the editor that I worked with for the next several years was. Daryl Baskin, who's a really great guy. You met him.
Mm-hmm.
I think you worked with him, or you showed him some.
I trained him
on the Final Cut Pro.
Yeah, I taught him how to do Final Cut because he was working on a web series, and that was what the company was cutting on.
Right. And look, these guys are really talented editors. I learned so much from them just hanging in the room, and like we had a supervising editor who was really brilliant, and we sat down and we, you know, just discuss talking and like, you know. And usually I would just sit on a couch and take notes and, you know, wouldn't really do much except just try to understand what the note was and how they were trying to basically achieve it. And, you know, you listen to these guys and, you know, they've been doing this for decades, right? And so you pick up on, you know, all the cutting room etiquette and all the lingo and, you know, it was really great. And, and at that point, you know, it was different. I mean, we had... you know, nowadays, I mean, you wouldn't even understand this, JJ, but we had one assistant editor station. That was it. Three assistant editors sharing one assistant editor station.
For
Star Trek? One machine?
For Star Trek, for like a big sci-fi show.
They were all sharing one machine?
Yeah.
Like in shifts, or just like, all right, you go, now I go, now...
I don't know how we organize. I don't know how we... I mean, you know, whoever... There was definitely a priority if you were doing like dailies, you would go in there. Yeah. Well, then we had a little booth that, you know, was our voiceover recording booth, and we had a Commodore 64 in there, and that's where we do our titles.
That's crazy. That's
insane. And so yeah, that's how we did. And we did a lot of tape to tape stuff. I remember like it was this like, you know, extremely. You know,
when was Star Trek? What year was that that you worked on it?
I worked on Star Trek. This was 2000. Yeah, I think it was 2000. You know?
And there was a Commodore 64 in there?
Believe it or not, there was still a Commodore 64 there.
Well, I mean, I'm assuming that...
I mean, things change. I mean, I did...
Hold on, what is a Commodore 64 for our listeners that might not know what it is?
Like yourself? Or do you know what it is?
Hey, man, I'm getting nuts from my friends. They're like, hey, man, I don't understand these big words that you guys use.
Sure. Well,
Commodore 64... like the Ford Pinto of computers?
Yeah, you know what the Atari was? That was pretty much like... It was almost like a gaming computer for a long time.
But you could run certain like apps. Like we ran a title tool on it. You know what I mean?
Right.
That's how we generate our titles, and then we would print to like 3/4-inch tape. You know what a 3/4-inch tape looks like? Yeah.
It's like a big VHS tape.
Yeah, and then we would. I mean, you know, we would have two of those decks, and we would.
That's so crazy.
We would write to. I mean, it was just.
Well, was Star Trek on film or was it on video?
When I was there, we were still there's lots of things that we were still doing on film. Like we would do these optical transfers of visual effects, and we would have to balance it to film. Again, the whole model changed within like 2 years. So
yeah,
so we had a whole
like to a more digital type.
Yeah. When I was there, you know, we changed a number of things. We started using you know, newer Macs, at that time it was. G4s, you know, I think we were on G3s or the old, you know, the beige looking computers. Right. And we went to G4s, which had like, you know, mirror drive doors, or we went maybe the version before that. I mean, every year we would change up everything, you know, from storage to, you know, to computers. And then what was great is like literally like I experienced like going from the Commodore to doing titles in Avid and then to building graphics, because by the end of, so I started, you know, on the last episode of Voyager and through Enterprise. By the end of Enterprise, I was, you know, I was using lots of elements that our visual effects department had shot to create like phaser blasts. And again, I think there was also a few of us, like myself, we were, you know, technically we were very savvy, so we were able to use lots of tools in the Avid, like the Animat, and then layer it with, you know, we would nest like effects, and you know, we would build something. And we would really kind of spend hours just doing that, you know, and we had fun with that. And again, we had one system to share. Still, till the very end, we had one system for three assistants, you know.
Did you go from Voyager right to Enterprise then?
Yeah, Voyager basically was I was hired temporarily on Voyager, and that led to Enterprise, and that was great because working on Enterprise. After the first couple of seasons, you know, really bonded with a lot of the editorial crew. And a couple of people left, and then I left with them for one summer to do Battlestar Galactica, which was a 6-month, you know, which basically, you know, it interrupted my Enterprise from season to season, but was really kind of them, is like they hired somebody to temp in just to allow me to finish Battlestar and then come back to Enterprise.
So what's, I'm interested, like, from a post standpoint, creatively, like, what that transition is like, because you're going, it's still a Star Trek franchise, but it's a different series.
I mean, to tell you the truth, that's interesting that you asked that. You know, they had done this before once or twice.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a really smooth transition. I mean, there are certain department heads that have the opportunity to go to, I mean, that they want to carry across. And some, you know, I think at some point maybe certain people just left, you know, to bigger and better things or features. But, no, I mean, it didn't really, editorially, it didn't really make a difference. I mean, you know, the guys that were cutting Voyager, there was no other. It's not like they had a choice. They didn't have two different. I think when they went from TNG to Voyager, they had both series that were running, so you had an option to be on one or the other.
Okay.
But from Voyager to Enterprise, it was the only, you know, it was the only thing that they had. So everyone was looking forward to the newer thing, you know. So,
yeah.
You know, production designers designed newer sets, and it was, you know, it was from a production standpoint, yeah, it was exciting because they were going to do a number of cool things and try, you know, try some new cameras.
Yeah.
And for us, it was, you know, there would be an equipment upgrade, so we had some newer systems. At the same time, as far as like the bodies go, everyone was pretty consistent. Like all our vendors that did all visual effects, they were all, you know, on board. They were the same guys.
Right.
And yeah, I think some model design work was, you know, certain things were dialed up a notch, you know, because, you know, it was definitely like the current thing that we focused everything into it. So, so yeah, from our different sets to, you know, the bridge to, but it was, no, for the most part, the same crew members, you know, a lot of, you know, 90% of the crew was consistent. You know,
so it was like a family production.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, these guys were there for 18 years. Lots of Daryl Baskin was there from TNG to Voyager to Enterprise. Same thing with some of the other guys. And they, you know, yeah, it was just another day for them.
That sounds like a sweet gig.
It is. But let me tell you that, you know, that's the double-edged sword.
It's like the golden handcuffs.
It is. But at the same time, it's like you know, you don't, because you're not networking with new people, you're not meeting new producers. It's later hard to get work because all of a sudden you kind of, I mean, yes, it's a great show and it's got its challenges, but you know, you're not, if you're not attached to someone and people don't know you, it's going to be hard finding that next gig. And so
it's like being married for like 20 years and then just now getting back into the dating scene. Something it's, like that.
It's
nice.
Yeah. Right.
It's like from kindergarten
for the D4Cs out there.
Yeah. It's more than it's basically, you know, more than your grade school education. It's like, you know, it's, no, it's crazy, but you're there for 18 years, and for most of these guys, it was, after that, it was like, if they couldn't find work, a lot of them just retired, you know?
Well, at that point...
Or I had no options, you know, but...
There's a lot of guys out there that were at the point where, because of the where they were in the market as far as Star Trek, like, at that point, they were getting paid a lot of money.
Right.
Like, in the early, or late 80s, early
That's
90s.
That's right, yeah.
And then, all of a sudden, we... as I guess the union, I don't know, decided to change the day rates and stuff. And so a lot of those guys got pay cuts for doing the exact same amount of work.
Right.
And
that had to be hard on them. I mean,
yeah, it had to be hard on them. But at the same time, if they would have saved their money during that time, hopefully they would be able to have that option to retire.
Right.
But, I mean, who knows?
Some of these guys, I think also you have to realize it's like, you know, a lot of them, a few of them I still work with, but it's like, you know, you know, the creatively, they're not ready to retire. You know, they still you know, they still have so much that they want to do, and so yeah, it's like starting over again. And sometimes it's like, you know, it's not fun to do that. You know, when you have to step back and, you know, start making new contacts and taking pay cuts. Yeah. You know, yeah. But
and this was all while you were an assistant too. This wasn't even getting into the editing.
So. No, I wasn't even getting into editing. But for me, it was like. I was fortunate enough to do the Battlestar thing. It was a great move, you know, because that opened up a bunch of doors for me, you know, after Star Trek. I was like, okay, Star Trek's ending. We don't have another, you know, we don't have a spinoff or, you know, a reincarnation of this. All
right. Right.
Well, I'm going to go do that.
Thing. Yeah. Well, it's funny because Nadav mentioned a friend of his that you were going to be on the show. And he was like, I have so many questions to talk about.
He's a Battlestar Galactica fanatic. Okay, well, perfect. I'm glad that you just did that sign to me, but because
we can edit this part out.
Yeah, we can totally edit this part out if it doesn't end up being fun or anything. But so I thought it'd be funny if you know, whenever we have guests in that work on something that, you know, maybe there's a big following on, just get one of those fanatics to ask as many ridiculous questions as possible.
Well, this is what I'm going to do. Your next guest is going to be my very good friend, business partner Andy Seckler, who's a supervising editor on Ballast Drawer.
Well, there we go.
Save all those questions.
So we should have brought Star Trek questions for you and then had Battlestar Galactica
I think we should maybe still talk. We should go back to like talking about like,
you were just trying to get out of this, aren't you?
Well, if we can have Andy on, that would be great.
Yeah,
Andy would be cool.
Yeah, we'll gladly have Andy.
Yeah. Have him on, and you know, he'll you have your friend on. Maybe you can call him, maybe you can put.
We have audio recordings of his questions that we're gonna play for you.
I think save them all for Andy.
Alright, so you're kiboshing this. This is officially a no segment.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Alright, fair enough. You know what? You're a first guest, you get that power.
Right. First right of refusal.
Yeah, exactly. But you got your
and Star Trek too. I think we should you know, we should talk about
Dan Curry would be a really great guest.
Oh, Dan Curry, yeah, Dan Curry was the visual effects supervisor on Star Trek. Really great guy.
Okay,
and you know, he's just, you know, he's an artist. He's, you know, he did recently some really awesome work on Crisis, which was
I didn't know he worked on Crisis. So him and Brandon worked pretty well.
Brandon worked together, and
he's
now on some Witches project. But he did. I know I was able to reunite with him on Cult. Actually, before that, when we were working on Gossip Girl, he was supervising visual effects artist on Chuck.
Oh, so that's awesome.
He was a supervisor. He had a couple of guys that worked for him that were compositors.
Yeah, we'll gladly have your friends on here.
No, but like, you know, what's great is like, you know, like Dan, you mentioned Dan, is because, you know, he's... You know, after Star Trek, he was able to, like, kind of sustain himself. He just went after one project to the other, and he's really super talented.
Well, and it's funny because I remember, I think it was when we were working on Gossip Girl, you showed me a project that he did some compositing work. I guess his son did a short film.
Oh, right.
And he did some compositing work for it, and it was just kind of interesting that, like, granted, it's his son, he's going to help him out, but the fact that he's helping somebody put together something that they want to put together, and he's so young, and he's been in the business so long, he could have been like, you need to find your own way through, you know?
And I think to a certain extent he has done that, but, you know, again, like, I would definitely go to him for advice, and I think his son, you know, to a certain extent was like, you know, I need visual effects. Well, who am I going to go to? You know,
I
need editorial advice. Who would I go to? Yeah. I mean, there's a few guys that he can turn to, you know?
Yeah, totally.
And he should, you know, and that's I mean, anyone who's making a film should reach out to some, you know, to some professional players and just be like, you know, I need help polish. If you can, I want to polish my script. Would you mind reading it, like, to Rob Henning? You know what I mean?
Right.
And so it's like, you want to reach out to these guys and, like, have them, you know, and they're most of them, if they have the time, they'll be more than willing to do it, you know?
Which is great. And I think a lot of people have that conception that, well, like, just now, talking about Dan, like, he's been in the business for so long, they have this conception that, well, he's not going to pay attention to me.
It's really not true. You'd be surprised. And I think a lot of them would take on, like, you know, if you're a visual effects artist and you really want to understand how, you know, what type of role that plays in the business, it's like, I'm sure you can reach out to these guys and you could shadow them for a couple of days, you know?
Right.
And so, yeah, I would highly encourage anyone who has, you know, aspirations of being in the business or understanding, you know, certain aspects of the business to reach out to.
Yeah.
Reach out to us, you know.
Now, does Harry know Eric Wong?
I don't think so.
Because Eric and I, who JJ worked with, we did the bar mitzvah video for Rob Hanning's son.
Oh, interesting.
So,
that's a weird circle of events.
Networking.
So, Andrew, how did we should? Yeah, well, maybe after the podcast, we should talk about how you got a chance to get to know Rob.
Yeah, it's through the company that I work with. We're a management company, so he's one of our clients.
Oh,
Rob and his wife, Amy.
Amy, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Is Amy still in the business? Is she working?
She is. She just sold a script, actually. A pilot, and I forget where she sold it to. But, and she was working on Bunheads she did that first season with ABC Family. And
right.
Yeah.
Oh, great.
Crazy small world. Well, we should probably wrap this up, I think. What do you think? It's about that time. It's been about an hour.
I'm bored. Has it been an hour, really?
It's been really close.
It's been about 41 minutes. When you worked on Battlestar Galactica, I am bringing you back to that.
Sure, no, of course.
Do you remember what year you worked on it?
I worked on the first two seasons.
What year was that at?
2000 and...
was it 07, 08?
No, no.
2005?
2000, so, yeah, 2004 or 5.
Did you... we know... Because Warren had one question that revolved around working on a show or Battlestar Galactica during the writer's strike.
Right.
And I wanted to know if you had...
No. I was... during the writer's strike, I was on Gossip Girl, so it was before that.
Okay. Right.
But tell me, what was the question? Because my friends were on it, and I... And
the question was just, what was it like to work on a show during the writer's strike?
Well, you could answer that.
Yeah, I mean, if you were on Gossip Girl, then you could talk about that.
Well, the thing is, I mean, I know most of my friends were on Battlestar as well, and I think certain aspects of production were... I mean, production halted, right? So there was no scripts, there was nothing to shoot, there was no writing, and so... for the most part, a lot of production went down. So for 3 months, you know, a lot of guys basically were out of work. But as far as post goes, we had a little bit of work because we were wrapping up shows. So we had, you know, we had studio and network notes that we had to incorporate. And even though our showrunners weren't around, a lot of them that, you know, they were on Battlestar, when they didn't have air dates, they could, you know, they could get shows done to a certain extent or push as far along as they could. Then, you know, you shelve them until the producers are back from the strike, so then you can, you know, you can go through them. But for the most part, you could do a lot of the work. You know, you could do a lot of the, you know, you could see it through studio, you can see it through network. You know, if you're to time or if you need to take time out, you could start, like, thinking about that and maybe start, you know, implementing that, you know. And I think on Gossip Girl, I had maybe an episode to wrap, but it was basically like we did as much of it as we could. Did the notes, and then, you know, once...
Like a hurry up and wait type of deal.
Yeah, and you know, it may have given us an extra month or a month and a half's worth of work, and then we were out of work for a month, you know. And I think on Battlestar, they had so much that they needed to do with visual effects, and once you get the shots in, what do they look like? Do they need to open up the show, or, you know, the scenes need to be adjusted. So between, you know, the editors and the non-writing producers, a lot of that could be done... And, you know, and I mean, they might have been fortunate to write everything, so they were even shooting it all. And then when they went on strike, you know, a lot of those guys were still able to, like, kind of sustain themselves for a few months. And yeah, it affected everyone. It affected us, too. But, you know, in post, we didn't, you know, we kind of were able to carry it a little further before our employment, you know.
Right, you were still able to find things to do.
Yeah, and again, like, yeah, sure, it affected us. And then there came a point where... You know, we were out of work for a couple of months. But you think of it as a hiatus, because when you did come back, then, you know, you had to finish your slate of works.
So, right, everything that you left.
Yeah, and so, you know, so that year you may have not taken a second break, or maybe you did, and you got, you know, you were out of work for a longer period of time.
A forced second break.
Yeah, for us, it was. I think for On Gossip Girl, it wasn't too bad. You know,
I wasn't on the show at that point.
Oh, you weren't. Okay.
No, I was. Yeah, yeah. I was working on a show that didn't have writers. So.
Oh, you were.
Yeah, I was fortunate enough to actually have work throughout the whole.
That's
thing.
Great.
But
no, but there was a couple of years that was it was kind of difficult. You know, we had an extended break, but then you make it up, because I also had years where, you know, for several summers I had a bunch of gigs. You know, so it was like. Like last year, you know, it was one thing after the other, and it was like, you know, a nonstop slate of work, you know. But this year, yeah, I mean, this year I finished Revolution, and I was hoping that, you know, we'd get a renewal, or we would come back for 13 and really kind of wrap up our storyline, and you know, and give our audience like a just ending. But I guess NBC decided, you know, that. You know, they were going to pull the plug on it because it was an expensive show to make or whatever, you know, and they may have filled the slot with a new show. But for us, it was, get through the season. It was an extremely ambitious year for us. And then we got through that, and we found out that we got canceled. And then it took me a couple of weeks to, you know, get back into the, you know, get my name out there, start interviewing. But, you know, next season I'll be on The Flash, which is
awesome.
Which is super cool. On CW, which is going to be great.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. With that, I'll let you off the hook with that.
Oh, well, with The Flash, have you read the script as far as, like, because a lot of times when you're brought onto a show, if it's like mid-season,
right.
Or like, let's say it's season two, you have to catch up. You have to say, oh, I've seen all season one. Now I can edit season two.
You know, funny enough that you said that is because I was talking with another producer friend of mine, and we're going to go to, like, we both plan on catching up on all our comic book reading, you know, yes. our DC comics.
Yes.
And I think we're gonna go to we're gonna make a field trip and go to DC Comics like next week, and we're gonna catch up on all the Flash villains because they're long enough. And I'm at some point Mirror I'm sure Man. Yeah I'm sure we'll get like a little Bible of what the year is gonna be like and
yeah well they have like they have volumes that you can buy because I was a fan of the Flash as well awesome. And you can get all the volumes of all the comic books for a relatively cheap. You know, amount, and you can get all four volumes or whatever.
I'm gonna do that,
and you can just fly through them. And granted, the older ones they're not great. I mean, you think, oh, it's these classic comic books,
yeah,
but they're not. You know, you just like, okay, let me just get through these. But I think that they're gonna be focusing just from my reading on about the show. excuse me, that mm-hmm. they're gonna be doing more of the Golden Age, Flash. But I mean, Wally West is really the character that I got into, which is the nephew of the second Flash's wife, which is very weird. I don't know. It's just kind of the rabbit hole for comics and characters just goes deeper and deeper and deeper the longer it goes. It's not like The Walking Dead is kind of the same example, but how there's these characters, but they don't. There's all these other characters that they meet, but the rabbit hole is not as deep as it is for fiction like The Flash.
Right. Yeah, you know?
But it'll be interesting to see where they go.
Yeah, no, you'll know.
Yeah, sweet, cool,
sweet. Well, with that, everyone tune into The Flash this season.
Yeah,
Harry, is there anything you'd like to plug?
No, you guys are doing a great job. I think, you know, you guys, I'm not going to plug anything, but I think, you
He's
know,
going to plug us.
I'm going to plug you guys.
There it is.
But I think coming back, you guys should talk about, you know, it's really interesting to me when we just, you know, when we first started this podcast, touching on, you know, how people got into this business. I think it's interesting to understand producers, directors, like, you know, what they've done, what mistakes they've made, you know, how they got started out and you know, I think that's great. You guys should definitely touch on that every time you have these podcasts.
Oh, definitely, because there's no one way.
That is the plan.
There's no one. There's way no to get one right way. Places.
No, and there's you know there's directors who have made mistakes, who have blown films, who have you know learned from their mistakes, and you know, and I think that's always interesting is to find out you know how they made it. And I think to a certain extent it was easier at some point you know to get into this business whether you were an editor or a director. And but nowadays I think you know there is a new generation of you know creative individuals have all for new skill sets and like they come in and you know I was reading about this Dutch film you know and you know very you know minimal budget but with visual effects this guy's able to you know have a you know have a major film and you get recognition and you know nice. His you know hopefully his next film will be even better and he'll have more money to play with but yeah, it's very interesting how people are resourceful nowadays and are able to do so much. So,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, thank you for coming.
Yeah, thank you. This was very insightful for
this far.
Not just our listeners, but also for me. This was very yes. good career advice for me.
The dog has his business card out.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't bring him with me.
Yeah. We'll get you an interview next week.
Down.
Which also leads to the you know to another true fact that's out there. It's like you don't know who's going to help you out in your career. So really, you know, be kind to everyone. You know, be nice to the guy that may be giving you your next job. You know, and so. Right.
Well, I like to think of it as the Bill and Ted way of thinking is right. Just be excellent to one another.
Exactly. Be excellent. Yes.
So yeah. Be kind unto others. And others, unto you. Have a great weekend.
That's until a great next end. Week.
That's a fantastic button, Adav. Yeah.
And that's a wrap. Didn't get your fill at Craft Services and you want more? Check out earlycalltime.com for more podcasts and information pertaining to the ever-growing entertainment industry. And remember to tell your friends about us via Facebook and Twitter. Thanks for listening.